As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome, everyone, to Soccer 101, the show that attempts to scratch the soccer itches you never knew you had. My name is Taylor Rockwell. I am hosting today. I tried to keep Ryan Bailey's catchphrase, though it sounds a little bit better with that British accent. On today's show, we're tackling a topic that won't cause any furor online, never has copious columns written about it in newspapers, and always makes Piers Morgan keep a level head. It's politics and football. Should be fun, should be spicy. To do so, to talk about it, I'm joined by Graham Ruffin. Hi, Graham.
Hi, Taylor Rockwell. Yes, if you already think we bring politics into this podcast a bit too often, this might not be the show for you. We do get some tweets complaining about that, but I think we both think that this is a relevant discussion, particularly this week, and something worth highlighting.
Yes, I think the thing that I will be people can be most interested by in this episode is my attempts to maybe play devil's advocate and how quickly I abandon them entirely.
I'm looking forward to that.
I think this is mostly just going to be you and me talking about politics in soccer and maybe how they've always been there. But we should provide a little bit of context for why we're talking about it this week, because this is sort of an ever-present thing. It goes back to COVID and before that, but even with the Brazilian elections of late, Brazilian footballers have been involved.
Yeah.
There's plenty of reason to talk about this, but there was one moment in particular this week that sparked our chat, Graham.
Yeah, so the reason we're talking about this topic this week in particular is that Paul Mullen of Welcome to Wrexham fame, he's not just a reality TV star, he's actually a real-life soccer player who plays soccer matches, and he posted a picture of his new boots this week. And on those boots, what's a message? So I will keep this PG-13. So F the Tories was that message, not so polite on his boots. And the picture of those boots with this message, it went viral on Twitter. I may have tweeted out myself. But Wrexham released a subsequent statement where they said Mullen would be banned from wearing the boots in the game. And this is part of the statement. The club has adopted a neutral position on any matters with a political dimension and intends to continue to do so going forward. So that was from the statement. They said they didn't know that Mullen was taking those pictures at the racecourse ground, which is where the picture was taken, and he's not going to be able to wear them during matches. And obviously, Paul Mullen isn't the first soccer player to make a political statement or a protest, so this seemed like the ideal time to look at football's often complicated relationship with politics and also some historical examples going back through the years.
Yep. And I think the Paul Mullen example is also really interesting because if you haven't seen Welcome to Wrexham, you probably do not know who Paul Mullen is unless you are a fan of lower league football in England or in the UK particularly. And so I think when you look at that photo, it's very clear why he has taken it where he has. You can see right behind it, if you haven't seen it, that it says Wrexham in the stands. It is in the stadium in the
The racecourse.
The racecourse. I always want to say like the Greyhound for some reason. The racecourse. Yeah. And because I'm not sure what that's about, but it's because he knows immediately that's going to get traction. He knows why people know who he is because of that show, or at least a lot of people do. And so I think it immediately broadens his platform a little bit. And with footballers, the more high profile you are, the bigger that platform is, the more opportunity you have to speak on these issues. And then comes the question, well, should they? Should they be speaking about these issues? Are they informed enough? Is it the right thing? Should they stick to sports is usually the message that they will get. It is in Gary Lineker's Twitter replies with pretty much every single thing that he writes. So, Graham, the question then becomes, first for me, why are there rules about this? Why do clubs take the stance they do? Why has Wrexham come out with the take a neutral position on these things?
Yeah, so first of all, I'm actually going to outline some of the rules that are actually in the laws of the game. So Law 4 of FIFA's Laws of the Game, which is the official title of that document, there is a section that makes clear FIFA's stance on political statements and symbols within football. So it reads, the basic compulsory equipment must not have any political, religious or personal slogans, statements or images. The team of a player whose basic equipment has political, religious or personal slogans, statements or images will be sanctioned by the competition organiser or by FIFA. So basically that is saying if you make a political statement on your shirt, on the t-shirt you're wearing underneath your shirt, on your boots like Paul Mullen, then you are open to a punishment from FIFA. Also, I think some leagues and certainly the FA in England, they have similar rules. So there's pretty much a blanket ban on that sort of thing across football. So FIFA would argue that blanket ban on political statements is easier for them as a governing body rather than having to act as the judge on which statements should be allowed and which should be banned. So essentially, FIFA, to see it from their perspective, they don't want to set a precedent where you have one political statement that is, you know, clearly fair and justifiable and wouldn't really offend anyone and most people can get on board with, but then have another statement that isn't so fair and isn't so justifiable using the precedent set by the first statement, if that makes any sense. They don't want to set that precedent. And there's actually a quote from IFAB board member. So IFAB is the body that sits alongside FIFA and they actually make the laws of the game that then FIFA adopts and imposes across the sport. So there's a quote from IFAB board member Jonathan Ford. He says, to determine what is right and wrong between different countries and cultures is very complicated. So it is easier to say it's got no place in the game. And that is essentially the stance of FIFA. Obviously, where things get a bit messy is actually deciding what constitutes a political statement or symbol. For instance, England's players recently, I think maybe Germany as well did this, they recently wore armbands that showed support for the LGBTQ plus community. FIFA allowed that fairly, I would say, because that to me isn't a political statement. Others would argue that it is. And obviously this sort of discussion will become more relevant over the next 2 months when the World Cup starts, with it being hosted in Qatar, where homosexuality is illegal. There will be protests, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if there's some statements made by players and teams on the pitch. Will FIFA consider that a political statement? Because the precedent they've set with England and Germany is that it's not. But maybe there would be a difference of opinion in Qatar, where that very much feels like a political stance for homosexuality to be illegal.
Graham, I'm already abandoning my devil's advocate approach, my neutral stance, to ask you, that feels to me like what FIFA are actually saying is, we want to be able to determine when we think a thing is political and therefore not appropriate, and that it's kind of up to us to decide if and when that is okay. So when we want you to wear a rainbow armband, it's okay. If you want to fly a rainbow flag in the World Cup, well, we might reserve the right to say, no, that's a political statement and we're not okay with it.
Yeah, and also the to look at the specific examples of those armbands that I mentioned, those rainbow armbands, the message was so nuanced to the point of, I would say, being pointless, where it was a slogan, where it was a campaign called One Love. You know, it didn't say anything like, you know, rights for LGBTQ community or anything like that. There were the rainbow colours, but it wasn't particularly prominent. It was only within the logo, the One Love logo. So it very much felt like a bit of a cop out, and it was FIFA. It was giving FIFA the evidence and the grounds to basically say, look, we're doing things for, you know, LGBTQ plus rights ahead of the World Cup, but actually not really doing anything at all.
All right, Graham, I'm back to my devil's advocate position now. The hat is back on, the fake horns are on the head for the devil's advocate portion of this one. Can you see a reality in which there shouldn't be politics. That rule should be enforced, and it should just be about sport, about, no, you're here as a collective group to watch these players play. It's about athletic endeavor and physical competition, and that's what it's all about, nothing else.
I think you will hear a lot of people who say that politics shouldn't be in soccer, and we'll maybe come onto this part of the discussion a little bit later on. But I think that the right question is whether soccer can exist at all without politics. I would say the answer to that is no, because soccer is about people, and more than that, soccer is a reflection of people, and clubs are reflections of cities and communities, and national teams are reflections of communities. And I just don't think you can remove politics from communities. And I find it most troublesome when clubs themselves silence their own players, because it basically says to me, well, we don't care about you as people. People have political views. Even people who think they don't have political views, they do, because so much in society is linked to politics. So if a club stand for things like their fans being treated fairly, their communities being treated fairly, then that is political, whether you like that or not. And I think that is something that every club should stand for. And from the club's perspective, many, they would argue, they don't want players making political statements because of potentially the commercial impact that it could have. So I would argue that in some cases clubs are forgetting their societal and sometimes even moral duty by forbidding certain political statements by players. And look, this isn't about me saying, you know, that a player should be allowed to wear a t-shirt underneath that says, you know, vote for this person in an election. My personal opinion would be that maybe is beyond a certain line, and you can see why a club who will have fans, for example, Wrexham is a traditionally Labour area of Wales. They voted Conservative in the 2019 election, so you could see that that might divide some fans. That might not be something that is beneficial to the club. I can understand why that would maybe be unacceptable for the club, but when a club is forgoing their moral duty or societal duty by getting edgy about sponsors, they don't want anything that could hurt their bottom line, things like LGBTQ plus stances and human rights stances, that's where I don't really have any tolerance for that. So it's similar again to the logic by FIFA. It's just easier for them to have a blanket ban, but I would argue that they are forgoing their responsibility as a club in some cases.
Yeah, to further illustrate your point, there's the Michael Jordan quote when he was asked to endorse, I think, a Democratic candidate. His response allegedly was, Republicans buy shoes too. And there is that, I'm not trying to take a stance one way or the other, because ultimately that person just wants to use Michael Jordan's celebrity to get people to vote for them. So it's not quite a fair exchange in my mind there. But then the counterpoint to that would be, I forget what his name was, the Fleetwood Town owner, though, who basically said, if you don't vote conservative, there could be economic changes. That means I might not be able to own this club anymore and we might go bankrupt. So it's up to you. Do you want the club to still exist? And right there is when you are sort of leveraging your position to force people to vote a certain way, to forcing them to act a certain way. And that is definitely for me where it crosses the line. So I think there's always going to be that delicate balance that clubs and players have to walk. Before we take a break, I would also just say, to go back to the idea of what constitutes a political message, that is also, I think, the sort of ever-expanding grounds for debate. And for me, front and center in this one is the Iron Front protest that happened in Portland that spread to, I think, pretty much all of Major League Soccer and all the supporters groups, or many of the supporters groups, where they wanted to fly the symbol of the Iron Front, which is what, anti-fascism, anti-monarchy. I forget what the other anti is in there. MLS said it was a political statement. I liked this summary from Michael Weinreb writing for The Ringer. Quote, the confusion and frustration stemmed in large part from the word political in the MLS fan code of conduct. What did that word even mean in this context? The Timbers Army had long flown not only pro-LGBTQ rainbow flags, but also banners in Arabic in the wake of Donald Trump's attempts to ban immigrants from several Muslim-majority nations from entering the United States. Levy tells me the Timbers Army had been flying anti-fascist flags since at least 2003. At one game I attended in September at a local broadcast, a local TV camera scanned through the crowd at Providence Park. It landed on a fan wearing a refugee's welcome scarf. So what, the members of the Army wondered, was the line? And that, to me, is the question. It seems like it has to be nothing at all political related, but that then becomes impossible because then you get symbols that are like you can't say are directly related to political movements or political ideology, but might be. And so are you banning those? And then where does that line stop? Obviously, it stops somewhere. But I think once you start trying to police that, it gets very tricky. So let's do this. Let's take a break. Let's come back and talk about some times that politics and football were intertwined, or instances when players or clubs or supporters have protested or had politics become very much involved in what they were doing. And then we'll have a broader maybe chat about, should this be the case? Should there be politics? Will there be more politics? All that and much more still to come.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Welcome back to Soccer 101. We are talking about the not at all contentious topic of politics in football. So, Graham, we were talking about Paul Mullen at the start. That's kind of being the thing that was the inspiration for this episode. But there are other moments in football where we do get politics and sport very much combined in a very public way. And I think the one that really comes to mind pretty much every single season is the wearing of poppies. So let's talk about that. Can you explain for people who are not as familiar why British clubs, or at least English clubs, I'm assuming it's all of Britain, but it might just be England, tend to wear the poppies on the shirt?
Yeah, so when we're talking about political statements, we've already established that there is a grey area where it is a little bit difficult to determine whether something is political or not. And I think the biggest grey area when it comes to these statements in soccer probably concerns the display of poppies in the United Kingdom. This is a debate every single year. From my perspective, gets a little bit tedious, but nonetheless, every 12 months it comes back around and we have the debate. And for anyone who doesn't know what that symbolises, the poppy is a universally recognised symbol in the UK to remember servicemen and women who have died. And that remembrance happens on a day called Armistice Day, which is in November. And over the last 10 years, football has decided it has a duty to be a representation of remembrance. So this remembrance happens everywhere in society. I remember it happening in school. You would buy a poppy for a pound or whatever. You would wear it on your school uniform. So it's not just a soccer thing at all. You'll see them in poppies in supermarkets and so on for a couple of weeks in November. But basically, over the last 10 years, football has decided to take on more of this representation. And so basically what you have is teams in the Premier League and teams in Scotland and in other divisions in the UK, they will wear poppies on their shirt for 2 or 3 weeks in November. FIFA has waded into this topic a couple times. They've caused controversy. In 2016, they caused controversy by judging poppies to be a political symbol, and so they fined England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland for their use of poppies in matches. On the flip side of things, the FAI, the Football Association of Ireland, they were also fined for displaying a political symbol for a badge commemorating the 100th anniversary of the uprising against British rule as well. There is a lot of grey area here, and basically, since that issue in 2016 where FIFA actually did fine the English, the Scottish, the Welsh and the Northern Irish FA, basically FIFA has turned a blind eye to club teams in particular displaying poppies. But I think also England have had poppies on their national team armbands. I think Scotland have done similar in the past. So basically, FIFA caused such a debate in 2016 that they've decided they're not going anywhere near this subject again. And so they turn a blind eye to it. But yes, it's the greyest of grey areas. And then to complicate things further in Scotland, we have clubs that have fixed political identities, which adds this whole additional layer. And obviously there are loads of clubs around the world that have this as well. Spain certainly has this with Barcelona and Real Madrid, who are obviously symbols of national identity. But in Scotland, we have Rangers and Celtic. Rangers very much aligned with the British establishment and by extension the British military. And so they make a big deal of Armistice Day, of Poppy Day. They wear the biggest poppies possible. They have a display from the British military at Ibrox on games that week. And then you have Celtic, who are anti-British establishment due to their Irish republicanism links, and they don't wear poppies at all, or they don't do any of that stuff. So this is just another example of how difficult it is to divide sport and politics, because you have so many clubs in the sport that are representations of something overtly political, and then also it's very difficult to decide what is political. Is remembrance a political act? Because obviously you'll get people that will say, you know, war is a political decision, but are you just remembering people that have died? I think that is a societal discussion every year around Armistice Day, but soccer has kind of become a microcosm of that debate over the last 10 years.
I want to talk about the like foundational identity of clubs and how politics can be baked into that. First, I wanted to go back to the poppies for a moment, because it's fascinating to me that while there is a debate about, is the poppy a political statement? Is it in violation of FIFA law, as FIFA said it was once briefly and then never again? But then it's within that, then there's the next debate of James McLean refusing to wear the poppy, or even Nemanja Matic, who I don't feel like came under nearly as much fire because he grew up in a war-torn country and basically didn't want to celebrate war, so he refused to wear one, whereas McLean, I believe, wears one because he is Irish and connects it to British military involvement in Ireland. And that seems to be where things... I'm speaking very much out of school here, I should add, because I am obviously not like steeped in this. But to me, it feels vaguely, vaguely reminiscent of the Colin Kaepernick kneeling during the anthem protest, where somehow that became about he's disrespecting the troops. And there were connections made to the national anthem that he was not making. And then people are screaming about it over the top and sort of not discussing what's happening and why it's happening. And I think a calmer explanation of why he is refusing to wear the poppy is to me not nearly as controversial, but where I see it like spill over is when it becomes like he's disrespecting all like veterans of foreign wars and people who served their country, and he doesn't care about the people who died in World War II. And that is clearly not what he's saying in my mind, and that Ireland took a position of neutrality and that's unacceptable, and people are bringing their own things to it. And maybe that's an argument for why politics shouldn't be in sport, because then you don't have this sort of acrimonious debate like coloring a football match. But on the other hand, I probably wouldn't know nearly as much about like relationships between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland and the UK without this moment. That was kind of the first thing that was like, wait, what's happening here? Why is this happening, when I was younger? And so I think it is at the same time useful in commemorating moments or keeping attention on historical events that I think players or clubs feel like should be kept on it.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, and I am going to editorialize a little bit here, this is my opinion, I think a lot of it just comes down to being a bit of a grown-up about it. So if James McLean doesn't want to wear a poppy, that's fine. That should be permitted. You know, it's his decision whether he wants to wear a poppy or not. Equally, if other players want to wear a poppy, then that is also fine. I am interested if Premier League clubs or in Scotland, Scottish Premiership clubs or whatever clubs display the poppy in their shirt. I am interested on how much opinion they gauge from their players on whether they want to wear a poppy or not. You know, James McLean is clearly feels very strongly in his views, and he has made clear to his club. But I'm interested if, you know, the players just turn up on the dressing room and there is a poppy on their shirt, or whether they actually go to the players and say, would you like to wear a poppy or not? And they get that decision. I suspect a lot of them maybe don't get that decision. I would advocate that they should probably get that decision. But yeah, we spoke about this. I can't remember when we spoke about this, but we spoke about it on the podcast recently about maybe Britain in particular, people in Britain losing sight of what it means to be respectful. I know what it was about. It was about the postponements around the Queen's death, basically. And in Britain, and I don't know whether this is the case in America, but it's more important to be seen to be respectful rather than actually being respectful. Yeah. And I think the poppy has become the pure embodiment, the pure encapsulation of that, because I personally don't wear a poppy, but that doesn't mean that I am showing disrespect to people who have died in wars. Of course I'm not. You know, I those people deserve remembrance. Not everyone that has fought in a war is pro-war. You know, let's not forget how people are drafted into wars. You know, people don't really want to go to wars generally, I find. It's not something that people want to do. I just think football needs to be a little bit more grown up about it. That's why I say it becomes tedious every year. You know, every every November we have this discussion, a certain player's not wearing a poppy, and then, you know, you have the talk sport discussion about how this player should be banned and how they're unpatriotic and how they're disrespecting the war dead. And I just don't think that is the case at all. But it's a debate that doesn't seem like it's going to go away anytime soon in British football.
Agreed. And I think there's two things there when it comes to respect. And I think you're absolutely right that there's immediately this response of like, oh, you don't have respect for the people who fought and died for this country and for global stability or whatever it may be. And that is obviously not what he's saying. And so right there, to your point, that's where I think there needs to be, you just need to be a little bit more grown up about it and understand the nuance of, no, that is not what I'm saying, but I'm saying in this particular incident or instance, I am not in favor of it. And I think that's okay. I also think for a person who is protesting, as James McClane is, or more recently, the one that stands out to me is when Pussy Riot invaded the pitch at the World Cup final, I believe it was. And I remember when Daryl and I were covering that, both of us, not understanding the context of it, were like, that's just a distraction. That's just going to annoy people. That's going to turn people against your movement. And ultimately, what I think that perspective is like, you're not respecting the game. You're not respecting the moment. And then understanding the context of it, and if we had slowed down to be grown ups and understand the context, you see it more as like, no, this is literally the only time that they will have that many eyes in a way that they can sort of like bring attention to the fact that Vladimir Putin is a despot who they don't think is doing a particularly good job of preserving civil rights in Russia and elsewhere, amongst many other atrocities. And I mean, that's 2018. Here we are now. Like, I think there is an idea that you must be respectful of the institution. I think oftentimes the institution saying that has a vested interest in you being respectful. And so I think, again, it requires nuance and, I don't know, a more rational approach, which maybe honestly brings about the idea of like, well, if we can't have that nuance, if we're not going to have nuance on Twitter from football fans, maybe we should go back to banning politics entirely. And that leads me to, I think, what is the major thing here is that so often we hear, I just wanted to go back to the way it used to be when there wasn't politics, when politics weren't so ingrained in every aspect of our lives and we didn't have to think about these things everywhere we went. And similar to when people say, make America great again, I want to go back to the good old days. Oftentimes when you ask them when those times were, they are pretty specifically not the good old days for certain groups of people. But then in this case, I would say, when would that be? Because go back to 1938 and look at that photo of the English national team doing the Nazi salute alongside the German national team. I would say that's a pretty overtly political statement. In my mind, politics has always been ingrained. I think we just have, as is the case with modern politics away from football, we have the speed of transmission of ideas is so much faster. Twitter spreads those ideas and spreads those events. And it's why we know that Paul Mullen is protesting the Tory government. Like, I don't think we know that 20 years ago because of the information age has expanded so rapidly. But I think it's always been there, just maybe a bit more delayed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you can see that in my research for this. I went back and looked through some examples of political protests and messages in soccer. And there are things like the 1938 World Cup, and you go through the 60s and 70s. There are always cases in each decade. But then you look over the last 15 years and there are loads of cases. And I think that's just our listed cases. And I think that's just down to awareness of those cases. Like you say, social media and the speed that which news travels and the fact that we know about things that are happening in, you know, Argentinian football a lot more than maybe we did in the past, or certain parts of the world that maybe don't get that much coverage in decades gone by. But now, as I say, we have social media. So I don't know, maybe I'm going to contradict myself a little bit later when we discuss whether soccer is becoming more political, but I absolutely agree. You know, soccer has always been political, and I don't know if you can untangle that now. And I don't know whether you should untangle that now. It very much feels like a part of the sport, whether you like it or not, really.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think if you go back to when the sport was first created and the popularity first spread, it's in those like sort of posh British schools is where it's very much institutionalized and you have more organized football. And a lot of that has to do with wearing out the students. Before we started recording, Graham, I was looking for a quote. It's from AP Bio, the TV show. And it's when the principal has to do budget cuts. And the first place he goes is to cut physical education. And the gym teacher responds, "Do you know what I do here? I tire out about the boys. Do you know what a bunch of hopped up boys would do to this school? And that is genuinely what, like, I think football was meant to be. It was meant to be a distraction to tire young people out, but also to tire them out so that they didn't pursue other endeavors. And that could be like relationships and sexual misadventures. But I think it was also to basically stop people from publicly protesting and getting angry and getting into fights. And you look at factory workers and factory teams that would be created. Sometimes that would lead to unions and things like that. Sometimes it would lead to basically, we're going to tire you guys out and have you like focus on football so that you're not focused on, like forming a collective to fight for better wages or more rights. And I think in that way, politics has always been involved in it. And then you do get those clubs that then become organizational fronts for larger political movements and social movements. And I think you can't really separate the two. I think they're like inexorably linked.
Yeah, and when you look at national teams in particular, I mean, national teams, is there a better public front-facing embodiment of a nation than its football team? I'm not sure there is. So it's always likely that people are going to try and attach certain things to those national teams. We're seeing it at the moment with Jair Bolsonaro, who has kind of weaponized the Brazilian national team shirt and has got a number of both current and former players. So I'm pretty sure Dani Alves is one of them. I think Alisson Becker, the Liverpool goalkeeper, has endorsed Bolsonaro. I don't know whether this is entirely true, so I'm not sure if I should mention it, but I saw on social media this week that Neymar is going to dedicate his first goal at the World Cup, assuming he scores a goal at this World Cup, to Bolsonaro. Again, I haven't seen that from him, you know, his own social channels or whatever like that. I haven't seen a quote, but nonetheless, I saw someone tweet that out, someone who I know is a reporter in Brazil, so I presume there's some form of authenticity in that and some validity. So you have Bolsonaro, and then in July 2014, you have FIFA fining the Argentine FA for the players standing behind a banner bearing the slogan that basically said the Falklands are Argentine on a pitch before a game in Buenos Aires. It was a game against Slovenia. And off on a slight tangent, if you watch the Maradona documentary from a few years ago, it provides a good insight on how the Falklands War was such a motivating factor for that Argentina team against England at the 1986 World Cup. And in fact, you have Maradona later saying that the hand of God was symbolic revenge for the Falklands War. Of course, he planned that all out, you know, that he envisaged that before the game. But nonetheless, national teams, it's just, it's in the name, you know, they are an encapsulation, they are a representation, a reflection of a nation. And so politicians are always going to try, whether they should or not, they're always going to try and attach other things to that.
Yeah. And I think to your earlier point as well, when you then also have clubs that are genuinely founded along a political ideology, that also is going to then be utilized. So Lazio, famously very right wing. I think if you're a right wing politician in Italy, you are going to maybe wear a Lazio shirt, or you're maybe going to court Lazio supporters. Maybe a left wing politician goes after Roma fans by contrast. But that's nothing new. Livorno in Italy is founded by, I believe, a left wing communist group. They still sing pro-communist songs. You will get that everywhere. Hapoel Tel Aviv, again, you'll see communist iconography, and that, I would say, invites the rise of Beitar Jerusalem, the right-wing club in Israel. So I think there's always going to be political ideology baked into certain clubs in certain ways. Not all clubs, certainly, but Celtic and Rangers would be another one of those too.
Well, as a Scottish football fan, when I hear that, you know, we need to separate soccer and politics, as someone who lives in a country that's dominated by Celtic and Rangers, my answer to that is basically, good luck. Let's see how that goes. Like, they're so soaked into the DNA. Politics is so soaked into the DNA of not just those two clubs in Scotland, but other clubs in Scotland as well, that to separate out the two, you would basically need to start new clubs entirely with entirely new identities. It's just impossible to separate those two things.
I entirely agree. This is where it gets tricky for me. And if people who were going to be angry at us on Twitter, hopefully they're still listening, because I think this is a thing that they've been maybe wondering or screaming this entire time, is what happens when it's a political message you don't agree with? And I think that is a very fair point to raise, because who is running against Bolsonaro?
Lula.
Lula, thank you. I keep wanting to say Libby, and I know that's not it. Lula. So Richarlison, I believe, is a Lula supporter. If Richarlison filmed a TikTok video where he's saying vote for Lula, I personally probably wouldn't have an issue with it. When it's Neymar doing it for Bolsonaro, I do have this like, ah, man, come on. What are you doing? That guy?
Yeah.
And I think right there, it shows that like we're all going to be comfortable with the things that like go along with our beliefs and less comfortable with the things that don't. And that is always with to go back to the Iron Front debate. I think that was Alexi Lalas's point was, well, what happens if I go to the other end and fly a like vote Trump banner? What like is that protected speech? Is that OK? And I would say, first of all, that's an overtly political slogan. But the one that gets that I hear a lot is players carrying the Palestine flag. And what happens if a player wants to carry the Israeli flag? Are we going to protest that? Are we going to be upset about it? In my opinion, is that it's basically if you want political speech in one way, then you have to be OK with it in the other way. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't entitle that person to how do I put this? It doesn't mean that they won't have repercussions for their actions. That seems to be what people, I think, oftentimes get frustrated with is like, I'm being canceled for what I've said and my freedom of speech. You have the freedom to say what you want to say, but that doesn't mean you are free from the repercussions. And that to me is ultimately where I think some of the dialogue just kind of flies off the rails, is that there's this idea that there aren't repercussions for what's said or that there shouldn't be people being held accountable. Looking at like the Poppies or Bolsonaro or even Carl Henry, the former player now retired, he takes to Twitter fairly often to criticize Labour in the UK, but mm-hmm. he vote conservative and why are you all should just work hard and make money and then you wouldn't have to complain about these things is more or less a tweet that he actually wrote or twote, I guess, if you're writing a tweet in the past tense. And I don't see nearly as many daily newspapers in England criticizing that political speech, but you will when Gary Lineker comes out and says something that is more pro-Labour. And so I think it's okay for footballers to express their beliefs and their opinions, and they should, but that doesn't mean that they're free from the repercussions, and we've seen what those repercussions can be. So I think that's where it gets especially tricky, but ultimately I think screaming about it just a little bit less, turning the volume down a little bit less or a little bit more is ultimately probably the way that it doesn't become too involved in sport.
Yeah, so to answer this question, if there was a question in there, actually,
I'm not sure there was.
to give my kind of opinion on this, I am going to go back to Bolsonaro because I think the cases of that that political debate and the way that he has used football gives me some good examples, some good case studies. So, Dani Alves, Alisson Becker, those players that have backed Bolsonaro. Tweeting or expressing their support for Bolsonaro, while I disagree with that personally, I would defend their right to do that. Where it becomes a little bit trickier for me is where Bolsonaro is, as I said, he's weaponized the Brazilian national team shirt that has very much become an icon and a symbol of being a Bolsonaro supporter. I don't like that because basically that is kind of imposing certain connotations, political views on a group of people, a whole country. And as we've seen by the fact that the Bolsonaro Lula presidential election has gone to a runoff, that is a divided country at the moment. And so I would say that is unfair to weaponize something like that in favor of one political candidate. So absolutely, I completely defend free speech, even when that free speech is not agreeable to me. As you said, keeping people accountable is key to this debate. I would always say, well, if you're expressing certain views, then they should be held accountable for those views. But yeah, as I say, there's certain weaponization of icons and symbols to do with football that doesn't sit so well with me.
Just wear the away shirt. That's what I would say. Just don't wear the home shirt. Wear the away shirt, and that's how you show your support for Lula. So, Graham, this all then leads to the question of, do we feel like politics are more intertwined with sport than they've ever been? Is this a... It's certainly not a recent development, but is it a more rapid development in our lifetime?
Yeah, so I do think soccer is becoming more political, not necessarily out of choice, but because soccer isn't getting much say mm-hmm. in the matter. It's getting more political because you have sovereign wealth funds and oil-rich autocratic states buying clubs like Man City and Newcastle and PSG, and you have the World Cup being hosted by Russia and then Qatar mm-hmm. in back-to-back tournaments, men's World Cups, which is obviously just a little bit ridiculous, a bit of a doomsday scenario for football there.
The Spanish Super Cup being played in Saudi Arabia, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you can't really talk about all that without being political. It's central to the whole discussion. So that's a big reason why it feels like soccer is becoming more political. And I can actually understand why, it's not my opinion, but I can understand why some people get tired of intensely political debates like the one around sports washing mm-hmm. in soccer at the moment. It is exhausting. And I can understand why some people would just sit down in front of the TV and think, I just want to watch some sport and kind of turn off, because it's a form of escapism for most people. But there are a lot of things that make that impossible, unfortunately. And in the specific case of sports washing, I do wish it wasn't part of soccer. That would make things a lot easier, and it would ease my own conscience, because mm-hmm. we are all complicit in a sense when we watch these clubs and we talk about them. We did listener questions this week. We talked about how good Newcastle's team is at the moment. Unfortunately, we kind of have to talk about how good Newcastle's team is. On the flip side of that, I still feel like we have a duty to recognise what is going on with that club at the moment and why they have Saudi Arabian owners at the moment. So that's the sports washing right there, is talking about those teams, and so we're all complicit in that. But as I say, I do feel we have a duty to provide the full picture and not just a little bit of it, and that comes back to people again, because soccer is about people and people are political inherently, and you can't really separate those things.
Yeah, I agree. I think politics is more intertwined in everything than it's ever been. Movies, pop culture, sport, whatever it may be, I think it's more involved. I think at the same time, to your point, Graham, what I think it requires to me is just more nuance and more rational conversation, more rational thought. Because Lazio, for example, I already talked about, very right wing, have like fascistic history, will do the Nazi salute on occasion. I think less frequently these days, but still, like when I see
it's kind of frowned upon.
If I see a Lazio shirt being worn in the United States, I'm immediately like, what are you advertising? What are you telling me? Mm. And I think the reason why I bring that up is to say that when we talk about Lazio, you're never going to hear me be like, what a great club, what a model of a club. They are like, show the way you should operate. I'm not going to say that about Man City or Newcastle either. I can talk about the way they've gone about building their academy or structuring the development of their players or the recruitment team they've put in place. And I can be very specific. But I think oftentimes we want it to be easier, because then it's easier to talk about. We want it to be, they're just a great club who are run the right way. And so then we can celebrate them and talk about them happily. And we don't have to get into all of the dirt and grime that goes on behind the scenes. But I think that is a thing that we have to do. We have to talk about, because otherwise you're sort of, in my mind, doing exactly what they want. It's why they bought those teams, is so that you celebrate the achievement and don't look at maybe how they got there. And I think that works both ways. And I think it requires then gentle correction, so that oftentimes I might praise a player or a club that I don't know has said something or done something or felt a certain way, whatever it may be. And I think it's useful to me when people respond and say, like, hey, you might not have seen this, or like, hey, here's why I don't like that guy, or here's a story, or whatever it may be. And I think it helps people understand more. What I think also can happen is, if I say, man, Lazio are playing really well this season, I will get a message that's like, I'm sad that you're praising a fascist team. And it's like, do you think that's what I was doing? Was I praising fascism there, or was I talking about the players on the field? And I think taking arguments to extremes is never going to help, but sort of trying to provide that necessary context in as useful and rational and calm of a way as possible is where you can find some balance.
Yeah, and I think with the Newcastle United discussion in particular, this has been a source of frustration for me, where I have voiced my opposition to a Premier League team being owned by Saudi Arabian sovereign wealth fund, And then Newcastle United fans, or some Newcastle United fans, will take that as an attack on kind of the Newcastle United community.
Yeah.
And that's not it at all. In fact, Newcastle United, in terms of their community, is and that club in general is actually one of my favourite in the Premier League. I've been to Newcastle United games. I love those fans. I love the atmosphere that they create. I think there's a natural connection between Geordies and Scots in particular. So Newcastle United has always been one of my favourite clubs. I just think the sort of frustration comes from when fans think an attack on their owners or their ownership structure or the intent of their owners is an attack on the fans and the club as a whole. That is not the case at all. And as going along similar lines to what you were saying there, just a little bit of nuance from some fans maybe, where they recognise our owners are not particularly great people, but that doesn't stop me from supporting my club. And I think we said that earlier this week, or maybe it was last week. That's a personal decision for fans to make. I just wish there's, as you say, there was a little bit more nuance to the debate.
In researching a question for our listener question show this week, we're recording this the week of October 26th, or that's the day we're recording this. I saw two different posts on the Newcastle Reddit forum, one of which was, like, is anyone else here so tired of people just like attributing the success we've had this season to oil money? Like, it's so much more than that, which is true. And then a few posts down was one that was basically just like, I don't care what people say. I love this oil money. It's made us competitive. And right there, it's like, see the difference? See how you all are yourselves debating this? And I think this is a case where things can be two things. Two things can be true, that Newcastle can have had massive success because of the influx of oil money and the regime behind it. But at the same time, it still requires players to play, a manager to manage them, a recruitment team to find the best possible players. And so you can have a team that is deserving of praise while also being cautious about being overly praising of the ownership structure and the way they've gone about making things happen. And I think, again, nuance is part of that. Nuance is probably a good thing to have when it comes to politics in general, but certainly politics and sport. So, Graham, I feel like we've covered that as much as I feel comfortable discussing it. How say you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if anyone is still listening by this point, but amongst ourselves, I feel like we have covered all bases, I think.
Yeah, and I would say my last thing, now that you've said that, I'll just dig us a little bit deeper by saying, I think
oh, good.
As we talk about nuance, I'll also say that with that comes the common sense approach, the Supreme Court approach to pornography of I know it when I see it. If there is a rainbow flag in the stands, that might be political, it might not be political, but I think I have a harder time like understanding why you would want to legislate against that versus if there is a fan group flying a just straight up Nazi flag, if there's a swastika right there. I think like that seems to be the ridiculous extreme that people take the argument is, I forget who it was. There was one of the videos I watched about this topic was going back to players having the flag of Palestine. Somebody, a pundit commented like, well, if they want to do that, shouldn't the owner of Chelsea, Abramovich, who at the time was residing in Israel, like, shouldn't he be allowed to have his players come out for warmups wearing like IDF uniforms? And it's just like, do you think that's the logical counterpoint? Like, really? Like, you know, you're taking that to a ridiculously extreme example. And I think right there, ridiculously extreme, opposite of nuance. So that one, I feel comfortable closing the door to, putting some earbuds in and not having to hear it. And maybe that's always a good thing. Put your earbuds in, listen to some music, don't listen to people scream about politics. You can't go wrong.
Yeah, I mean, there should be a Spotify playlist that is just called Common Sense, and I would I would implore people when they're having this discussion, this debate, maybe just to listen to that playlist while they're thinking about this.
I want that playlist to just be like calm, nuanced takes, like in a gentle voice of Iron Brew is delicious, unless you think it isn't, in which case you don't have to drink it. Track two. Like you just keep it moving that way.
I can't buy that opinion. That's
See,
not what I'm on board with.
Graham's already protesting. I've gone the opposite direction. I apologize for that, Graham. I never meant any slight towards Iron Brew, obviously.
Sure.
Graham Ruffin, thank you very much for talking this one out with me. I feel like we did about as good of a job as I am comfortable saying we could do. But thank you again for talking out politics and sport with me.
Thank you, Taylor Rotwell. Yeah, it's undoubtedly a tricky subject, but as we said at the top of the show, probably one that is worth highlighting.
Any listeners who are still listening, the four or five of you out there who haven't turned this off at this point, we very much appreciate it. Let us know if you made it all the way through, ideally with a thumbs up and not a middle finger emoji. We'll see how that plays out. But for now, thanks so much for listening. We will talk to you all again next week.